With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome to Text Message. I'm Nate Langson.
And I'm Ian Morris.
Sorry for the gap over the last week. Lots of things happening in the world of Nate. Chiefly, I was busy with work. And
That's a terrible excuse, but I mean, I do believe you.
Yes, it's true. And it has been announced. I'm going to be head of European Technology Editorial at Bloomberg in Europe from January.
That's quite the job title, Nate, isn't it?
It's not bad. It's quite fitting. The podcast will continue, and who knows, maybe additional Pod K will appear in the future. I generally keep these two things separate, but I thought it's worth noting that life has been, like the collection of sweets in my fridge right now, packed. Anyway, let's get on with the news. The first thing I wanted to talk about is something that I find most curious. This is a report that came up on Business Insider that O2 is in the, quote, well-advanced stages of looking at technologies to block ads, that's web ads, across its mobile network. Now, O2 has 25 million customers in the United Kingdom, so this is quite significant and plays into the larger trend of the war on ads, or at least the ad-blocking apocalypse. I've seen it called many things, including ad-blockalypse, which is a horrendous term, but has been bandied around in general. So this, Ian, seems quite an interesting move by a mobile network. I think, to put this into the bigger picture, smartphones within the next 3 or 4 years are going to account for the overwhelming majority of web traffic. At least in terms of web pages and what have you, and apps, they're going to account for most things. So a mobile network, even considering getting involved in the potential blocking or intervening of ads at the network level, is massively significant, because this could become, if all the networks get involved in this, this could become the thing that differentiates mobile networks from each other, from just being dumb pipes. Depending on who's got the better ads or the better ad blocking technologies, that could sway a customer possibly either way. What would you reckon to this, Ian?
They're not the first, are they? Because EE's already tried this, or at least as there's been news reports saying that they're considering it. But for me, it amounts to basically little more than theft, really. These ads that they're talking about blocking are not really theirs to block. It's completely unreasonable for a mobile network to come in and just say, oh no, these ads aren't good enough, they don't meet our quality guidelines, we're going to shut them down. I mean, I understand the impulse to protect their customers and to make sure that things look good on the network, but it's just not the way the internet works. It's like content blocking, but 1,000 times worse. It worries me in a lot of ways. I just think that when you're buying a service from someone, and be that phone calls or data, I expect that service to be sort of clean and unfiddled with. You wouldn't tolerate them putting an ad in your voice calls, would you? You know, like, you wouldn't say, oh, you know, there's going to be a break in your call now to pay. You know, let's just cut into your conversation. And I mean, that's exact reverse of what's going on here. But again,
let's be honest, though, mate, that could work. I mean, imagine the following. Ring, 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 ring. Well, hi, this is Nate. I can't get to the phone right now. Please leave a message. Hi, Nate. Please pick up food for the cat. The cat's starving. You haven't fed it in 4 days. Thanks. This ad brought to you by Friskies.
I mean,
Whiskers, 2 for 1 in Tesco.
That's, you could say that if mobile networks wanted to be, reduce pricing and make it so that things were free, or maybe you could switch from some limited data to unlimited data, then perhaps, you know, they could opt to give you some advertising. But to take out the thing that pays for pretty much the whole internet is I think it's completely immoral, really, and unconscionable from a business perspective. I just think that what's going to end up happening is that these sites will say, well, okay, so E and O2 customers just simply won't be able to visit our site, and they'll have a banner that says, call your service provider, because they're blocking our revenue stream. And then basically it will become unworkable, because the core volume of people trying to see, you know, X site on their phone and not being able to would just overwhelm EE and O2 and make it just completely unworkable from a financial perspective. They'll lose more than they'll gain.
That's, if we take this story as an apple, that is the side of the apple within which a maggot has set up residence for him and his family. Let's turn to the other side of the apple, the side of the apple that could sustain us in this weird world in which survival is entirely based on fruit. The benefit that could come out of this is that ad companies will need to work with mobile networks to produce ads that are permitted across some hypothetical ad blocking firewall within a mobile network's infrastructure. That could be a good thing for everyone. Here are a couple of reasons why. Reason the first, ads are quite considerable in download size on some websites. That causes an increased load on the network, which causes an increased load on the amount of data you need to download on your phone. That costs you money. Having better ads, smaller ads, you know, whether they're less intrusive or not, could be a good thing for the networks and faster internet for the user. And the industry does need and would benefit from moving to a more modern way of serving ads, because there are good ads, there are atrocious ads, and this could be one way of getting everybody to really kind of take a bit of an industry reset on what a modern advertisement is and serving it towards the smartphone. Because right now, a lot of ads, even towards smartphones, are basically just desktop ads scaled down in some way. But a mobile phone has so much technology in it to personalize an ad. And yes, you know, privacy concerns, yes, yes, yes. But let's just assume that on the privacy side, everything's fine. This could sort of usher in a new era of advertisements. Now, surely that's a good thing for the companies that rely on mobile advertising.
Maybe, but I also just don't think it should be part of the remit of a service provider to sort of lay down the law like that. I think, yes, it you know, there needs to be changes in the ads industry, because I know this from speaking to people who are tangentially involved in content, but not, you know, authors or anything like that, that help support sites from a technical point of view. And what those guys tell me is that ad networks are awful and they are horrible to deal with, and they do not understand optimization, and they try and do things that really you wouldn't do if you were, you know, if you were coding for the web as a, you know, someone who's just, say, working for a company, you just wouldn't do anything like that. And they're arcane and out of date.
But there are ad networks and there are ad networks, and there are good ad networks and there are bad ones. There are some types of ad networks, a very bad, what's called programmatic ad networks, that basically rely on volume and not quality. It's the kind of, they're very, very, they cover a very wide range of areas, but they're very shallow. Whereas there are then other types of premium advertisements, you know, and these aren't even generally done by networks. A lot of these are done in-house by media salespeople, and they can be very, very customized, and they can be, and they're generally more valuable. They're a more higher cost advert, but they're also higher in returns to the advertiser.
And presumably harder to automatically block anyway, because they don't necessarily come from a recognized ad network.
Well, that doesn't generally matter. They don't have to come from an ad network to be blocked,
no.
Because part of the industry's problem is that ads are generally served in one of a number of very standard units, either the square ones, they're called MPUs, the really tall, thin ones you see on the side, they're generally called skyscrapers, and then the very thin, very wide ones across the top, and they're called leaderboards. And generally, you see these sites on these types of adverts on most websites, and they are often the easiest to produce because nobody has to negotiate a size.
No.
The ones we're seeing more of now are the in-content ads, or the ones with customized sizes or customized ways of attracting a user's attention. And that's where things can get really awful, because they can be so distracting, they just make you want to block all ads, and then you've done yourself a disservice. But there are some that are more subtle, or they are better at ads. And I think that if an industry needs to have a kick up the ass, it is the ad network industry. And if everyone's moving to smartphones, that requires a bit of a reset from the industry. And frankly, as long as somebody is doing something to better ad networks and better adverts themselves, that's good for everyone. That's good for the user. That's good for the people who rely on adverts as a business model. And, you know, we are moving into a completely mobile dominated web world. So,
true.
I think this is good. And at the end of the day, the mobile networks, they are, in future, they're going to be just considered ISPs.
But does it not worry you slightly that this is being forced on everyone? Like, consumers haven't really asked for it. Like, the networks might say that they have or suggest that their research says that. But that's not necessarily the case. And, you know, and publishers are going to be very concerned about the idea of them not even knowing what ads are being stripped out. It concerns me a lot because I think that there's a lot at stake.
Yes.
It's not that the internet isn't exactly free. It has to be paid for somehow. And that is, unfortunately, and no one likes it, but I ads.
Yes, indeed. Well, these are in the testing stages. I think basically all the networks at the moment are considering this, and they have to look at it. O2 is in some more advanced stages than others, but I think this is something you can definitely see becoming a more mainstream conversation. So it's worthy of you having an opinion on this now. Ian, what is your favourite hole?
Oh, good question.
Thank you.
I'm trying to think now. I did go into some nice caves and potholing in Wales once. It was I don't necessarily like confined spaces, but I did have a nice time.
Let me just steer you back on track, because I thought you were going to talk about headphone sockets.
Yeah, oh, well, I could have done that, but that would have been far too easy, wouldn't I?
It would have. This is the rumour that Ian is speaking of, that the iPhone 7 is going to remove the headphone socket. Why, one wonders? Well, thinness. It's actually the tallest of all holes or objects, gaps, on the current iPhone. It is taller than the lightning port. It's taller than a speaker, than a screw, than everything. And that is a problem for Apple, because there's only really so much thinner a phone can get before headphone sockets start becoming problematic.
Yeah, except, I mean, I do get that, but I also would suggest that there's probably more to this, like, internally. Like, there is only a certain amount of space in a phone. And if you open up a mobile phone, it is the most densely packed object you would ever see. I mean, there is no spare space in there, and that's with good reason. But if you look at an iPhone, and this is the rumour is that the iPhone will lose the headphone jack, you've got to put all those bits somewhere. The battery has to go in a certain place, and then the circuitry has to go somewhere else, and the screen has to go in a certain place. How much thinner can any of this get with the current technology? And okay, there may be new batteries coming which are thinner, but they're not here yet.
It's all about consolidation. If you see this from a step back perspective, all we have seen in the technology world over the last 15 years, and arguably further back still, is the mass consolidation of products and technologies inside the iPhone, inside the smartphone, rather. The smartphone is the supermassive black hole of the consumer electronics galaxy. It is sucking everything into the middle. Everything's getting consolidated. All the bits that used to form separate parts of a screen are all now formed together in, you know, touch panel with LCD display, with the graphics processor that's all embedded onto the chip. We've seen all kinds of technologies blended together to make phones thinner. There is a way to go, I think, and phones still can get thinner. And the source of this rumor came from a Japanese blog called Mako Takara.
Yeah. And this is, by the way, the only source for this rumor. Like, anyone who's written about this story has got it from this source. So there's no double checking going on here. This is a one source story.
It is. This is a blog that's had some things right in the past. But really, this we're only talking about this not because we think it's going to happen.
No.
It is, as you say, a very just one single rumor from one source at the moment. But it's a good thing to talk about.
It's a fascinating talking point, really.
So here's the thing. What Ian Morris, do you think is my opinion, because I'm quite a music snob, what do you think is my opinion of Apple getting rid of the headphone socket on the iPhone?
I think you'd say good riddance to the thing.
Ah.
The reason that I would say that you might be for it is that you could then transition to your own choice of DAC, maybe, or, you know, what you're getting out of Lightning is digital. There's no analog channels on that connection. So anytime you use a pair of headphones with a Lightning port, that those headphones have to have their own digital to analog converter built in. Now, that moves the quality away from the iPhone and into the thing that, you know, produces the sound, so the headphones. Now, it's only been done a handful of times, hasn't it? The Lightning port headphones. Philips have got a set, and I haven't heard them, so I can't tell you whether they're good or bad. But the idea, of course, is a solid one. That said, it's going to be quite difficult to miniaturize that technology to the point which it's transparent to the end user. So I would say there's potential there for you, but you may disagree about your own thoughts.
You obviously know me very well, because you are completely right. I think this would be a great thing. This would be a really good thing. But, there is a large but here, even though I think it's a good thing, I don't want to see headphones with Lightning adapters. As you say, what this does is allow for another small connector, which in general isn't a good thing, because the more connections you have between an audio source and an audio output, the more chance there is for quality interference. But to have that as a way of getting higher end audio is a good thing. That's great. I love that.
There has also been a sort of, there's also a parallel rumor along this as well, isn't there? And that's that they won't take the headphone jack away, but that they'll change the shape of it and make it a smaller with a top cut off. And I mean, that's if you think about it logically, that's an even more ridiculous idea, because why would you do that when you could simply just use the Lightning port and save a whole lot more space? And also, if you were going to change the headphone jack but not remove it, then there is already a smaller standard for headphone jacks, isn't there, that you could just as easily go to?
Yeah.
But the one, I don't know what size it is officially.
It's 2.5 millimeters.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily as good a solution as this. I think that we are in an adapter-rich world, and certainly I would definitely miss the simplicity of plugging a standard audio cable into it. I mean, this is a standard that's been around for over 50 years. It's not changed, and that's a good sign. You know, that's a sign that we are probably ready for an upgrade. But there is something rather advantageous about having a port as versatile as Lightning, where you could plug in, you know, DACs, new amps, different types of headphone technology that could improve sound quality. I mean, that's a good thing for audio. The slightly annoying thing is that, knowing Apple, they'll charge £25 for an adapter, which is in itself a problem. I mean, this happened with the very first iPhone. It was recessed. The headphone port was recessed. So you had to have either a headphone jack that was already small enough to fit into the recessed socket, or you had to get an adapter, and they cost a few quid. That was incredibly annoying.
I think that the only way that Apple could ever do this is if they put everything you need in the box and make sure that if you have to replace it, it's dirt cheap. Now, that isn't an Apple way of doing things,
no.
Is it?
But the other thing, the other side of this, though, mate, is wireless. You know, we are more and more people are using wireless headphones. Apple has introduced a standard, so you can already get headphones that plug into the Lightning connector. That does exist and has existed for a little while. But in the future, more and more things are going to be wireless, and it makes sense to maybe start supporting that and having manufacturers think about it. I just hope that quality is preserved as well as convenience, because,
well, it's going to be very difficult to assure that, really, because what you're going to ask people to do is put, I mean, and this is just simply a matter of how it works, you're going to have to put the DAC in the headphones and you have to power that somehow, and my understanding of the Lightning port is that you're not allowed to draw power from it. And I might not be entirely 100% right on that, but I'd love to hear from someone if they know. But I believe the Apple standard is that you're not. And that leaves some problems, doesn't it? I mean, how do you sort of manage this whole process, and how do you give a DAC enough power to do a good job? It's going to be very difficult to get it right. And for that reason, I don't think it's going to happen yet. But what would you put the percentage chance at, if you had to guess, in the iPhone 7?
I'd put it very highly because Apple has a track record of getting rid of things that are really popular in order to make things smaller. You know, they got rid of the floppy drive with the original iMac.
Well, that wasn't really that popular.
All right, well, they got
rid of the, liked the thing.
They got rid of the DVD drive on all MacBooks now. You know, they went a few years ago.
Massively popular with me, but perhaps no one else.
They got rid of the dual input and output audio sockets on the MacBook Pro.
Well, that's a bad idea,
isn't it? That was ridiculous, and I still haven't forgiven them for that. There are lots of features Apple just takes away in order to make things thinner. So I think the likelihood of it happening eventually, I would say it's almost definite. It's the largest.
Next year?
For the iPhone 7.
I mean, this is the rumor, isn't it? The idea is that it'll be next year.
I could see it happening. And I could see Apple saying we're going to make Beats the default headphone in the box. And we've changed the connection. So all Beats headphones now that Apple sells come with a Lightning connector as standard. And that's going to become the new way of Apple's upselling headphones. And
if they're going to have to put a little bit of work into Beats first for that to be a palatable decision. But actually, it's not a stupid idea. Like, Apple headphones don't... No one loves them, do they? I mean, they're, some of them are okay, but no one would ever say...
They're all terrible.
You've got to look at what people are using. I heard a girl the other day, I could hear all of the music, and she had in-ear headphones that had rubber grommets. I don't know how that much music was leaking out, but everyone in the train was looking at her like they'd, you know, would happily push her out of the door at a moment's... This is a fascinating idea. I suppose that's the capacity Apple has to surprise people. I don't believe a word of it. I don't think it'll happen.
Well,
not yet, anyway.
Well, let us know what you think. podcast@natelangson.com. Would you miss your audio hole? Well, the worst of the BBC's television channels, despite a 250,000 people petitioning for it to remain on broadcast television, is going to move online only next year. This is, of course, BBC Three. I did say worst. That is a subjective opinion. It's meant to be very good for the youth demographic, but I have never seen a programme on it that I ever want to see again. So I do not miss the broadcast. But this is a very significant change for BBC Three and for television in general. This is the first of the BBC's channels that has moved from terrestrial broadcast to online only. And the reason is that more people are watching it online than are watching it on broadcast anyway. So it's not really going to be very difficult for the BBC to move its audience for BBC Three online. But there was some discussions to keep it as a terrestrially broadcast channel, but the BBC Trust has said no, it's going online and it's going to be on the BBC iPlayer, and that's going to happen. So, Ian, this is good, I believe. You know, regardless of our opinions, we're not the target demographic at all for BBC Three.
No.
It doesn't affect us at all, but for the people that it is targeted at, it's very popular, does a lot of very, very good programming for that group. And this is great. This is setting a new precedent, certainly in terms of massive broadcasters moving to online only. This is great. Great news.
But you know what? Here's the problem, right? Okay, so I mean, I agree. The audience for that channel is online, so that's good. The difference and the problem is that when you have a TV channel, you have you commit to a certain amount of hours on that TV channel and a certain amount of programming, and so BBC Three will have X amount of imports, certain amount of, you know, original programming, and then some repeats. When you take a channel online, which doesn't really get done very often because it's extremely hard, you're not obligated, are you, to fulfill you're not going to necessarily have to have a certain amount of content. Now, they may make a rule for that, but I think what's just going to happen is the channel, the core audience of that channel is just going to die. There's going to be no way for them to sort of keep putting money into online for BBC Three.
There are a couple of things worth mentioning then at this point.
Yeah.
The one thing is that some of the longer form programming that goes onto BBC Three will get shown on BBC One and BBC Two during certain peak slots for the audience that it's targeted towards.
Well, they do sort of already do that. They do something called BBC Three on BBC One or something like that. Well, so you'll occasionally see a BBC Three programme crop up.
Well, that's going to carry on happening. But the other thing that's worth noting here is that the reason for this is not entirely just because half the audience is already watching it on online anyway. The reason is that it wants to try and sell, it's going to save them 50 million quid. And what they're going to do with 30 of that 50 million quid is create new drama for BBC One. The other thing is getting rid of Red Button, which is also something the BBC is doing.
Who cares? I don't, that I think has overstayed its welcome by 10 years, Red Button. I think there's got to be a better way of doing it. It's just such an expensive thing to run because it is another set of broadcast channels that you have to staff and, you know, and build a technical infrastructure around. And I would say I would rather you kept BBC Three and got rid of all that. And I think actually you would probably save money doing that.
Possibly. I mean, the whole idea behind the Red Button is I mean, to put it another way, rather, it's second screen. Red Button is second screen. And people
Which
now
could just as easily be on streaming on iPlayer, couldn't it?
Exactly. It now is, you have a second screen in your hand, there is less need to have Red Button. And this is, again, another cost-saving thing. In fact, it's part of the £150 million that the BBC needs to save. The getting rid of Red Button is one of those. BBC Three is another. There are various other cuts as well. But this,
I'd rather we just didn't have to cut anything and we've kept funding our crown jewel of achievement in this country properly.
I think while I agree with the general sentiment, the BBC is a bit too big at the moment. It is a big corporation.
But that's not the bit that needs to be trimmed. It's the bit that manages it. And the people like, I mean, Alan Yentop's just stepped aside, but people like him who used to, you know, draw a big salary and turn up presenting programmes and meddle in things. Like, you know, things like that need to stop. And those are the things that, you know, they may not make so much of a massive financial impact, but they're getting rid of management, really, is something I would be happier to see than to lose services.
Well, the other thing is that the BBC still has this weird iPlayer loophole where you don't have to pay a license fee to watch catch-up programmes, which many people take advantage of now.
You know, I mean, that's going to be a problem in the future, I think, and it will need to be legislated for. But again, you've got, you know, paying for the BBC is a contentious issue, and the license fee solves the problem somewhat by only requiring people who have TVs capable of receiving live broadcast to pay it. But increasingly with things like, you know, iPlayer, that becomes less of an issue. And, you know, how else do you pay for it? Taxation puts it in the hands of government and then it isn't as independent, and that's a problem.
Well, on that note, let us know what you think of these changes, and specifically to go back to the original story we began this discussion with, BBC Three moving online. A problem for you, a problem for your children, a problem for your children's children. podcast@natelangson.com. That's going to do it for this week. Ian and I are going to do our very level best to continue putting out some sort of programming over the Christmas and Hanukkah and Winterval, or whatever you want to call it, period, the end of December, it's usually known, and into the new year. We're going to try and do a couple of specials. We're going to try and maybe get in a couple of smaller new shows, but it's a busy agenda and we have families. And hopefully you will maybe use the time that you were spending listening to the show going on iTunes and leaving us a really positive review to make sure people don't abandon us in the new year like some sort of orphan at Christmas booted out on Boxing Day, given an orange to survive the cold. We'll see you in a week, all being well.